Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Game of Thrones is in the home stretch of season 6, the first after becoming the first series of its kind to win the Emmy Award for Best Drama. Emmy-nominated game director Jeremy Padeswa joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. WGN America is super to an acclaimed new series this year, Outsiders and Underground. What directions and original content will the channel take from here? John Wax, WGN's new original programming chief, will be here with a reply next half hour. We'll also have the latest on Dish Network's blackout of WGN and Parent Tribune's 44 television stations across the country. Coming up as well, fallout from yesterday's mass shooting in Orlando, Apple Speaks Apple TV, and our classic trivia question of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information, and an Amazon company. Thank you very much for joining us on this Monday afternoon, 74 degrees at the top of the hour. And first and foremost, we join everyone at Blog Talk Radio in sending our condolences, our love, our support, and our prayers to the people who were impacted by yesterday's mass shooting in Orlando, Florida. The biggest mass shooting of its kind in the history of this country. 49 dead, 53 wounded, some in critical conditions. We speak at this hour, and we send our thoughts to them, their families, and their loved ones. We thank you for joining us. We have an amazing hour and change in store for you, and we invite you, as always, to be part of the program, All About Television. Some super guests coming your way, and we invite you to interact with them by using this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country and around the globe right here on Blog Talk Radio. We've got a chat room as well that you can interact with. It's on our Blog Talk Radio site. It's SimonApple04 by name. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you and get you involved. And as always, while the program is on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Emmy-nominated director of Game of Thrones, Jeremy Padeswa, will join us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. The highest viewership in 15 years. That's what the Tony Awards did last night on CBS. Viewing was up 33% over 2015, according to Nielsen's overnight estimates. One factor was the lack of an NBA Finals game on ABC. Another was Hamilton, the national attention for this New Age musical, and winning 11 awards, one short record 12 achieved by the producers. But the big factor may have been how the Tonys would handle the aftermath of the mass shooting yesterday in Orlando hours earlier. Well, the road turned out to be both classy and sensitive, from the opening by host James Corden to a sonnet commissioned by Hammett creator Lin-Manuel Miranda. Yesterday's tragedy in Orlando had at least two other TV-related ripple impacts. TNT postponed the last shift's two-hour season premiere last night because the storyline included a shooting inside a Vietnamese nightclub. TNT has not given a rescheduled date at this hour. And a Violence on TV panel was pulled from yesterday's lineup at the annual ATX Television Festival in Austin, Texas. Son of Anarchy's creator Kurt Sutter was set to moderate that session. 7 million Dish customers cannot see WGN America at this hour, or local stations owned by Parent Tribune Media. WGN and those 44 stations, including stations here in New York and Los Angeles, were blacked out last night after both parties failed to reach a new carriage deal. A license fee increase is the sticking point. Apple opened its annual Worldwide Developer Conference in Silicon Valley this afternoon with few tidbits on new Apple TV initiatives. Apple TV overseer Eddie Q introduced a new single sign-in feature, where one sign-in gets you directly into any of more than 6,000 available apps, including 1,300 video channels. Q suggested Apple TV will introduce HomeKit control functionality to many smart home devices this fall. And one final quickie. Netflix will start Series 2 of Narcos, its prize-winning series, September 2nd, and premiere Nick Kroll's Big Mouth, an off-kilter tune from the popular comedian and former Comedy Central show star next year. And that's news notes for today. Nearly a year ago, HBO and a series called Game of Thrones achieved what many thought was impossible, being the first series of a specific genre like science fiction, horror, fantasy, etc., to win the coveted Emmy Award for Best Drama. Something that other series of those genres could never, ever do or people could never think of. Not only that, they won major acting, directing, and writing categories. A major milestone for television. My first guest today is an Emmy-nominated director for his work on games, but he's much more than that. He is one of the top episodic directors in the nation for such shows as Six Feet Under, True Blood, and The Newsroom, which, by the way, will be one of our will be our classic trivia question subject later this half hour. And he directed the first two episodes of this season's Game of Thrones earlier this year. Joining us live from Los Angeles, Emmy-nominated director Jeremy Podeswa. Jeremy, it's great to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
How did you get the assignment to do the first episodes this year?
They just asked me. I'd worked with them previously, and they seemed happy with my work, and I had such a great experience on the show, and they honored me with the first two episodes this season. So that was pretty much it.
And those first two episodes, Jeremy, turned out very big. One of them resolved what was probably the big controversy at the end of season five, which was the killing of one of the key characters.
Yes, and it created an amazing amount of interest, I think, among the public, a kind of inquiry that kind of went on like the public sphere and every medium and every kind of platform. Everybody was talking about what happened to Jon Snow. Was he dead? Was he alive? It was very interesting to be at the center of all that and to be holding on to that secret and not being able to tell anybody for all those months. But the speculation was kind of amazing. You know, I knew there would be a lot of interest, but not to that degree. It was quite a fascinating phenomenon, actually.
When David and DB, the creators and executive producers of Game, give you that assignment, how do you approach it? How do you approach an episode where you know social media, the public, is going to buzz one way or the other about whatever you do?
Well, you know there's going to be a huge amount of interest going in, but you can't really think about that when you're working on it. I mean, the main thing that you do think about, though, is that you want to satisfy all the expectations that people have. So you want to make sure that when the reveal finally happens, that it happens in a way that's exciting, that it's dramatic, that it's unexpected, that people feel up until the very last second that it could go either way. You just don't want to tip the hand at all as you're doing it. And I think that's sort of the big thing for me as a filmmaker. As a filmmaker, is to try to approach this in a way that you never really lead it too much in one direction or the other, and that the audience still remains in a state of suspense through the entire thing, right up until the very end.
Mm-hmm. How does your directing style differ on Game of Thrones from everything else you've done? How have you expanded your craft because of what you do on that series?
Well, I think probably everything that I've ever done feeds into what I do on the show, because the show really kind of demands from a director that you bring in, you know, so much of, you know, who you are, what your past experience is, your experience in many different arenas. You know, the show has, you know, drama, it has spectacle, it has action, it has humor. It has, you know, uses like every possible mode that you possibly could ever have worked in the past, you know, all to one purpose. Whenever you're doing any show, I think you're really working with the established vernacular of that show. So this show has its very own language that you have to learn and adapt to when you get involved in the show. But you do bring in really all the experience that you've ever had in your life before. And, you know, everything feeds into the show in a really profound way.
And also, Jeremy, there was another aspect to your first two episodes, because this year everyone involved with the series said, we are going to go for the first time off the books of George R. R. Martin.
Yes.
We're not going to follow the pattern, if you will. So basically, you and everyone had to create a whole new dimension to the series that George R. R. Martin had never cooked up.
Yeah, and I think that was really exciting for everybody, actually, to not be married to anything, but just to be able to go off and in any direction that they thought was dramatically exciting. And I think for Dan and David, the creators of the show, they've been diverting already quite a bit in the last couple of seasons, but now for the first time they're really not married to anything at all. And I think that is, you know, it's liberating in a certain way, and it's very exciting for the audience, because people who were fans of the books before had some sense of where things might go in the series as they were watching it, but now they really had no idea. So everybody was going into it with a very fresh kind of outlook, and I think that was very exciting. And it was very exciting for me to introduce this new season where, you know, anything possible could happen, and that the fans, you know, were really going to be in the dark for a long time and hopefully very excited about the new direction for the show. So that was very fun, and that was something we were all really mindful of, that the audience was going to have something really exciting to hook into this season.
When you're up to bat first and you're directing that first pair of episodes, as opposed to having to take the ball from somebody else who's gone before you, as you did the year that you won the Emmy nomination, What's it like? How different is the variables? How different is the dynamic when you set the pace for everybody as opposed to you've got to follow the pace and still bring your style or bring your smarts to the program?
I think in many ways the work is the same. In some regard, I think that what's really different is really what script you're given. And I think the first two episodes is a very exciting prospect because you never really know how it's going to go. In this particular case, I think what the writers did, giving me a gift in a certain way, was not making the first two episodes ones that were really big in terms of just setting things up. It wasn't a lot of laying track. What they did was they really picked up the story right after Jon Snow was murdered in the previous season. So you're in a point of high tension and suspense right away. And it just propels you forward through the entire first two episodes. So it's really just like forward movement, forward movement, forward movement. It's not like you're just laying track out or you're recapping things or... You know, I think the gift to me was from the writers that, you know, you didn't have to do that kind of thing that does happen very often in the series when you're kind of revisiting things again at the beginning of a new season. So, you know, from a directorial point of view, it was really just up to me to take advantage of that, you know, what they were providing me in the script and make that as exciting for the viewer as possible and as fresh feeling as possible.
Jeremy Tesba is the Emmy-nominated director of Games of Thrones, now in its sixth season on HBO. Two more episodes to go next Sunday and the following Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Jeremy joins us live from Los Angeles here this half hour on Tomorrow Televised. We're happy you're aboard as well. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York this Monday afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Jeremy, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name, our very good friend, Rick Rev from Philadelphia, already in the room. Coming up Friday on our program, we're going live to the Rocky Mountains for our second annual visit with the folks at Series Fest. That's the annual new programming fair that was started last year. Joining us with the organizers, Randy Kleiner and Kaylee Westbrook. The first year had 26 pilots for possibly television series. This year, 34, including one that was presented originally last fall at the New York Television Festival that we highlighted in this program, Dead John. And we hope, again, as we did last year, to have the best pilot winner of Series Fest on an upcoming episode of this program. Don't miss it. Series Fest organizers, Randy Kleiner, Kaylee Westbrook, live from Denver this Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televised. What was it like, Jeremy, to go back on the set and hear everybody, you know, here we are nearly a year after the big Emmy Award win for the series?
Oh, it was great. I think everybody really felt, I wouldn't say vindicated exactly, but very excited in a way because I mean, the show had had so much fan love for so long and a lot of appreciation from critics, but for some reason it was really hard to crack that Academy kind of feeling that, you know, Game of Thrones, you know, is part of a genre that isn't normally honored in this way. So I think, you know, what this showed is that Game of Thrones is a genre show. Genre shows can succeed on a level that can compete on a level with any other kind of show. But also in a way, I think it's a tribute to the show that is really unlike any other show that has ever been done before. I mean, the way this show kind of appeals to people who are not genre fans, it appeals to people who, you know, would never kind of approach a show like this ordinarily or get devoted to a show like this ordinarily. It's something about the show is kind of like outside of all categories and outside of all boundaries. So I think that this, you know, indication that the specialness of the show that, you know, is why the show was awarded something, that was something that we really all felt very acutely. And everybody was so appreciative for that because they know that it is something really so unusual. I think everybody was so happy to come back to work and everybody really, you know, was so grateful for all the kind of recognition they've received beforehand. And also that the show had received a kind of new level of popularity that had never really happened before. It just the show, unlike many shows that go on for season after season, this one just keeps building and building and building. And it seems like the fan involvement and appreciation is just greater and greater every year. And that is something that nobody takes for granted. I think that's kind of an amazing accomplishment.
It also seems, too, Jeremy, that people really appreciate what goes into the series. The storyline, the characterization is very rich. Obviously, the action scenes, the effects, the humor, the original music, that opening title that changes every year that gives you, like, the whole world in, you know, 1.5 minutes, when most opening title sequences don't even last 10 seconds. There seems to be this real depth on every level of this is a genre show, but it is more than a genre show. We understand you could go any which way you want, and it would still be a show that people understand.
I think it's true. And also, there's just such a high level of accomplishment on every level. I think the casting is just spectacular. I mean, every actor in the show is brilliant. And, you know, there is something very special about and kind of magical and alchemical about how the show all came together. And it's really a tribute, I think, to Dan and David and to the producers of the show. They really just put together this incredible team of craftspeople, of actors, writers. It's just somehow the chemistry just all kind of works and makes something greater than the sum of all of its parts. But all those parts are actually individually, you know, incredibly beautifully executed and rendered. And, you know, I don't know. I can't explain it. I've been on a lot of shows, and this is a very rare show where everything comes together at the highest level. And I think people really recognize that, and that's great.
You've had an incredible career of gravitating to some of the top shows in recent television history, whether it's been 6 Feet Under or True Blood, a number of them in HBO series, but others as well. How do you gravitate as a director toward a show? What sense do you have of this is a show, whether it's Game of Thrones or 6 Feet Under, et cetera, that I want to work on? Do you pick and choose what you do, or is it like, do you audition for it? Let's say, this is a show I want to be on, therefore, you know, I'll find a way to get an assignment.
You know, I think it can happen a number of different ways. Sometimes you get asked to do something. Sometimes I go after something actively. But I think to me, the decision to do something has so much to do with who's running the show and who are the creative minds behind it. And, you know, for me, there's so many amazing people working in television right now. And if you're lucky enough to be able to work with those great minds, that's the best thing you can possibly do, whether it's an Alan Ball or, you know, Dan and David or Aaron Sorkin. I mean, there are really incredible writers, incredible producers, working with incredible cast now in television. And that's really what you gravitate to. You gravitate towards material that's driven by a singular vision. In all of these cases, you have very strong people at the top who have created very singular kind of shows that are very strong reflections of their own personalities. And those are the shows that are very exciting to do. That, you know, unlike doing things that are, you know, more generic in a certain way, or, you know, straight up procedurals or straight up soaps or whatever. You know, all those things can be enjoyable. From a filmmaking point of view, I'm really attracted to working with people who have a very strong filmmaker's vision. You know, they're approaching things from a very independent voice. And, you know, increasingly with, you know, television being really broad and what it's doing these days, you have more and more people coming into TV, like Jill Soloway doing Transparent, or, you know, so many other voices that are very singular, doing great work. And that's very exciting for someone like me, because you get to work with so many different people who are very, very strong in what they do.
Does it make the choice of what you do difficult when there's so much now quality television on the air and all sorts of different places? We have John Wax coming up, who just became the original programming chief at WGN America. He told me that you had talked with him when he was at Fox on various assignments. Is it tougher because you see a show, let's say, on John's network like Outsiders or Underground, or you see a Mr. Robot on USA, and you think, boy, if I had the time, I'd like to take on a segment?
No, I mean, having more great things to work on is never a problem. I mean, it's fantastic that all that stuff is out there and that it's on all platforms, not just on HBO. I mean, previously there were like a limited number of platforms that were doing really interesting work. And now everybody is doing interesting work. And that's very exciting. There's so many more different avenues to explore and new people to work with and people being brought into the fold. You know, people are creating television shows that come from theater or come from movies or, you know, come from very interesting kind of backgrounds. And they're all contributing to this medium now in very, very interesting ways. And so, you know, to me, it's fantastic that FX is doing great shows and that WGN can do something great and, you know, Hulu can do something great. I mean, the fact that all these things are possible, you know, just makes more great work. And the more great work that is out there, the more great jobs I can get, hopefully. And, you know, so the more the better. I think it's a very exciting time right now.
You've had a good relationship with Alan Ball, who put together 6 Feet Under, which I think was a fantastic television series, one of the best of the last 15, 20 years. And then he did something totally different in True Blood. What's it like to work with someone who can create that kind of striking vision, make something out of what some might consider a crazy show, a show about a funeral parlor or a family that runs a funeral parlor, and then turn around and do a whole sort of like unusual, very sexy vampire drama set in the Deep South?
Well, Alan is one of the one of the really great minds working in television and one of the really great people. And he's a lovely human being, very thoughtful and very sophisticated. And I think what really drives all his work, which is what makes him so brilliant, is that they're all driven by a big idea. You know, 6 Feet Under, yes, on one level, it's about a family that runs a funeral home, but really on the larger level, what that show is about knowing that life is short, what kind of choices are we going to make in the lives that we lead? And that is a very big thematic hook to hang something onto. And it sounds like a small thing, but it's no small thing at all, because the what it does is it offers opportunities for story and character that are very, very rich, and potentially very moving. And what that show did was, I think, in a very unique way, dealt with really enormous subjects, dealt with life and death and choices that we make and, you know, the complexities of living in this world, and, you know, made them funny and sad and moving. And, you know, Alan is able to do all of that in a TV show, which is really amazing. And I think 6 Feet Under is one of the singular achievements in television ever. And that was actually my first show for HBO, my first show, you know, working in LA actually. And what an entree into that world. For me, it was incredibly powerful and meaningful. And to this day, one of the most important shows I think that I've been involved with. And I'm very, very, very happy to have had that experience. And True Blood 2 is also driven by a big idea. It's really about outsiders and about tolerance and intolerance and, you know, how do we deal with people who are different from us and about people who are marginalized. And, you know, on a sort of metaphorical thematic level, it ripples out all kinds of ways that are really interesting. And, you know, these big ideas are very, very important to Alan, and I think important to the viewers of the show that get really invested, because it's not just a show about vampires. It's a show about things that's a lot bigger. And his, again, his singular achievement is to make those shows meaningful, but also really entertaining and funny and sad and dramatic and all those great things.
Jerry Bidezwa is the Emmy-nominated director of Game of Thrones, which is getting ready to wrap its sixth season on the air. Two more episodes to go this coming Sunday, the following Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO. Jeremy's live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Applebaum on the other coast of New York. Happy you're with us on this Monday afternoon. And if you have a question or comment for Jeremy, we have someone who does. We'll get to that person shortly. Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. What iCarly did for combining the internet with television on Nickelodeon about a decade and a half ago, a new show on Disney Channel wants to do it for social media and television. It's called Bizarre Bark. And next Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have the creators and the executive producer. We're talking Kyle Stigna, Josh Lehman, and Eric Friedman. By the way, the first two are involved in a brand new Disney Channel program that started last year to bring new writers to television. We continue to see more new writers getting a chance to run their show. They'll all be with us. And the show is again called Bizarre Park. It premieres about a week or so from now on the Disney Channel. Also, we'll introduce you to a composer who may very well be up for an Emmy Award for his work on Mr. Robot and or American Crime Story. Matt Quayle will be with us too. That's all next Monday, June 20th at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, good to hear you. Go ahead. Jeremy Deswa is all ears for you.
Hey, Jeremy. I noticed that you had just spoken about vindication through success and you know, via like critical backlash early on, too much like sex or violence in Game of Thrones and such. So I wondered, like, how did you deal with some of that critical backlash and, like, you know, soul-crushing criticism, and that, you know, when your instincts are saying that you're doing your best work, maybe your best work ever, but yet there's some, you know, critics out there still and kind of question your talent.
Well, you know, I think the criticism that you're talking about, I think, you know, has to deal with a lot with the content and the writing of the show. And I never felt personally attacked by anything in the show. But I think that, you know, some of the things that people were reacting to, I think, were things that create an interesting dialogue, you know, around representations of things in television and the media. And I think, you know, controversy is something, it's not something that's being sought after necessarily, but it is something that, you know, if you're doing things that are challenging, that are complex, you know, sometimes you are going to have controversy. And I think, you know, the writers and producers of the show are prepared to deal with those things. They feel very strongly about the artistic integrity of the show, and You know, I think they really believe in the world of the show and the depictions of things in the show. And, you know, I think that, you know, I can't speak for the writers or the producers in terms of many of the decisions that are made, but I know that they, you know, stand by the show very strongly from a creative point of view. They certainly have welcomed discussion and are open to discussion and have addressed many, many things in their own interviews. But I think, you know, the show has always had a great deal of appreciation, and that's outweighed any sort of, you know, critical, you know, response that's been there as well. So I think, you know, you sort of take everything holistically, you know, the positive and the negative, and, you know, you respond to it as best as you can. And, but it's very important, I think, for the creators of the show to feel that, you know, they're not too swayed by agendas too much and that they can do what they think is creatively, you know, significant and important for them to do. And creatively, you know, kind of consistent with what the show is, the show that they've created. You know, they've created a violent, complicated world, and I think it's important for them to feel that there's a kind of consistency and truthfulness in terms of the world that they and George Martin have created.
Well, I love the show, just to put that on the record. So continued success, and congratulations on your past, you know, Emmy nominations, and I'm definitely going to keep watching.
Thank you. Thank you. Keep watching. Yeah, it's good. The end of the season is pretty strong.
I'm prepared.
Okay,
thank you,
ready.
And thanks for your advice, and thank you, Simon.
You're very welcome, Rick. Anytime. Take care. Rick with our friend from Philadelphia right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Jeremy, what's coming your way? What's the next directing assignment for you?
Well, the next directing is more Game of Thrones. I'm actually going off very soon. I'm in pre-production right now. I'll be directing two more episodes next season, including the premiere. And lots of exciting stuff ahead. So that's the next 6 months of my life.
And any other shows that you're looking at doing, or is there a new show coming up that you want to be part of?
Well, there are many shows that I love. Everything just depends on timing and all that kind of stuff. It's a little bit hard to look beyond where I am right now. So I'm tied up now until the end of the calendar year, and then in the new year, we'll see.
Game of Thrones, two more episodes to come in season 6, and more to come in the year or so ahead. Game of Thrones, Sunday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO. Check your local listings for where HBO is available in your area on cable and sound. Don't forget, if you miss the episode when it runs live on Sunday nights, it gets replayed throughout the week on HBO, HBO 2, and HBO On Demand. For more details about the show online, here's where you go, www.hbo.com. That's www.hbo.com. And this year's Emmy Award nominations, which, by the way, will be coming out in a couple of weeks. The Emmy Awards this year, I believe, will be on ABC, and that's coming up in mid-September. Jeremy, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on the Emmy nominee earlier, and I hope you get up for another Emmy for the first two episodes this year. And all the best to you and everybody, cast and crew of Game of Thrones. It's been another fantastic season, and we really appreciate you taking the time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. A pleasure.
You're welcome. Take care. All the greatest.
Thanks. Bye.
Jeremy Podeswa, Emmy-nominated director of Game of Thrones, joining us live from Los Angeles. Once again, Game of Thrones, two more episodes to go this season, this Sunday, next Sunday, 9 p.m. East Pacific Time on HBO. This would only be the part of the program that we would have a message from Audible.com, an Amazon company. We're going to forego that today because of the situation with the aftermath of the Orlando shooting, and we want to give as much program time as possible. So we'll bring the message back next week, or we should say on Friday's episode. However, we want to remind you that if you want to take part in Audible.com, you want to get a free audio book and a 30-day free trial, here's where you go, URL www.audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised, Audible.com, and Amazon Company. And we'll be back with the full message on Friday's episode. And now it's time for our regular feature, the classic trivia question of the week. We'll give you the question in a few moments, and if you're first with the correct answer, you could win the new book all about Twin Peaks, the classic ABC series that is being revived next year on Showtime, published by Applause Books. And in fairness and in honor of Jeremy being on the program, we're going to have the question about one of the shows that he has done besides Game of Thrones, also on HBO, The Newsroom. It lasted 3 seasons on that channel. And here is the question. Name the Newsroom's network. Name the Newsroom's network. We will either take the full name or the acronym. The full name of the acronym of the network that was the subject of The Newsroom, which lasted 3 seasons on HBO. The cast includes such people as Jeff Goldblum and Sam Worthington. So, If you have the answer, email it, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And simonapple04@yahoo.com, please include your name and your mailing address. You can also get the answer to us on Twitter using this hashtag, Twitter, hashtag TWBT. That's hashtag TWBT, as in Thomas. That option is made available by the people at Hopscotch, the folks who invite you to create your own social soundtrack. Learn how from Marty Monaco and the fine crew there at www.hopscotch.com. It's www.hopscotch.com. Remember, if you first with the correct answer, you'll win Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause Books. Remember, got to be in it to win it, so please do so, and all the very best. We're starting a new effort to try to get a string of winners. We had two winners over the last 3 weeks. Let's see if we can get our third and four this week. Once again, simonapple04@yahoo.com. or Twitter, hashtag TWBT. If you missed the question just now, we'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and on my own Twitter hashtag, at UBC Simon, TWBT. When we come back, we will go live again to Los Angeles, and we'll hear from the new head of original programming at WGN America, John Wax. All that and more after we pause at the bottom of the hour for quick web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, the best internet radio on the planet. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Stay tuned to BTR for more programming dealing with the aftermath of the mass shooting in Orlando, Florida. Welcome back to more Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon, June of 2016. Simon Apple Bannerman with you live from New York. Delighted you're with us. Another great guest coming away this half hour. If you have a question or comment, give us the ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, still in the room. It's been a great year so far for WGN America. Two for two in original drama series premieres. One is Outsiders, the other is Underground. A lot of people think that Underground could very well be a major contender for this year's Emmy Awards. And last week, that network got someone new on the scene, their new head of original programming. And he is with us now live from Los Angeles, John Wax. John, congratulations. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
John, how have you been doing in your first few days? Have you sort of assembled what your first priority is at WGN America?
Well, let me clarify one thing. I've actually been here for the past 3 years since the beginning of the original programming initiative. It's a title bump, and so in that sense, yes, it's a very new challenge. But in terms of the sort of the day to day, you know, I'm there, overseeing and helping to shepherd these programs, you know, the same way I always have. So, in some ways, it's a new thing, and in some ways, it's business as usual, which suits me just great.
Well, what part for you is the new thing? What challenge do you take on?
Well, I do think that, look, you said yourself, the first half of this year has started well for us, but by no means are we resting on our laurels, and we're very hopeful for some Emmy attention. Obviously, that's a big deal for a network like ourselves, but now it's also about, you know, looking to the future and what else can we do to build on it. So we have a couple of things in the pipeline, and then it's just about, you know, sort of my day-to-day duties, which are fielding writers' pitches and, you know, starting to think about setting the menu for what the network's going to turn its attentions to, you know, next year and beyond.
Over the last 2 years, you put on four original scripted series, Salem, then Manhattan, then this year Outsiders, and Underground. And if there's a connecting point with those four shows, it's Americana, whether it's American history and making a twist on it, or whether it is a slice of Americana, like Outsiders, which is modern day, but it deals with maybe a side of Americana, Appalachia, or the Appalachian area that we don't see. Is that a fair assessment, or is that a fair reaction to what original programming at your network is like, that it has to be Americana in some way?
I think it's a fair assessment. I mean, certainly if you look at what we've put on so far, that, you know, that describes it to a T. I'd be lying if I said it was entirely, you know, sort of predetermined that that's what we were going to do, but it's what we kind of gravitated towards in terms of setting shows, you know, in America, various hinge points, either in American history or dealing with, you know, modern day issues. The one thing I would add to it, the way we talk about it here, is we all, not just are they American tales, but also the worlds, the specific worlds that you enter, hopefully, in our shows, are very unique and hopefully either not on television or, you know, haven't been explored for a long time. And so you can kind of see that. Certainly Salem is a, you know, major period in American history with the Salem witch trials, albeit with our, you know, genre take on it. Manhattan was dealing with the Manhattan Project in Los Alamos. a world that you'd seen in movies, but you hadn't seen in an ongoing series. And then, of course, you know, Outsiders and Underground, Outsiders, as you described in Appalachia, and Underground, certainly a tale that hadn't been told before with the Underground Railroad.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, John, with Underground, when we had Misha and Joe, the creators and executive producers of the series, I mentioned that back in 1963, CBS had an historical anthology series called The Great Adventure, where one of their outstanding episodes was about the Underground Railroad. And it starred Ruby Dee as Harriet Tubman, had the great actor Brock Peters as one of the slaves that used the railroad to escape into freedom. And it seemed amazing that from 1963 on to this year, nobody ever thought of taking that rich period, an important period of American history, and turning it into a television series. How long did your network consider taking Underground and making it a series, and what was the factor that finally said, yes, let's do it?
Well, I think it hit us like a thunderbolt. I think we had the same realization that you just described. It is only one of the most, you know, inherently dramatic periods of American history, and it just it felt odd that it had sort of been neglected, you know, for so long. So we, you know, I don't know if Misha and Joe covered this when they were with you, but we initially fielded the idea as a script that we really enjoyed, and we immediately invested in the characters. But we had a couple of creative things that we wanted to do to it, and you know, to make it work for us, or how we felt like it could work for us. And so we proposed that to them, and they really took it at that point and ran with it and made it their own. And so when they came back with their new draft of the script, I think the ball really got going. We got very excited about it, and I think we thought seriously about shooting it and putting it on the air.
And it has premiered to incredible reviews. I think a lot of people did not expect the treatment of the show, especially what John Legend brought to it, or the writing and the directing, the cast for sure. And now it looks like that may be your breakthrough in terms of getting major Emmy nominations. Last year, Manhattan won for its wonderful title sequence by the great group of Magic Forces. But it looks like Underground may very well be a big contender.
I'm a little superstitious. I try not to talk to the pitcher in the middle of the no-hitter, but hopefully your words will ring true shortly.
John, talk about Outsiders, because that's an example of what we are really seeing as a huge trend in television, and we'll talk more about this in a bit. But it seems that we are seeing more and more writers who are new to TV, because they come from independent film, or they come from novels, or they come from playwriting, as Peter Mattei, the producer behind the creator of Outsiders, did, and they're not only getting a chance to realize their vision as a writer, but they're getting the chance to run the show. When you approve somebody like Peter's work for Outsiders, and you give him the creativity to run the show, if you will, what goes into your head? Why do you give that freedom, and what do you think about how that show has turned out?
Well, obviously, we're very, very proud of the show, and a couple of things. I mean, first of all, I think, you know, for WGN America, a relatively new player on the scene, you know, as of just a few years ago, sometimes, you know, we may have to look a little deeper, turn over some more rocks to find, you know, the gems that we want, because, you know, some of the other bigger players, you know, maybe snapping up some of the bigger names in the creative community. So in that's, or at least the names that are known to this point. Mattei, quite frankly, is actually, I had years ago when I was at Fox, we had developed one thing literally maybe 10 years ago that was an adaptation of a book that didn't end up getting shot. I always enjoyed working with him. I remembered that from a long time ago, but you're right. He did end up, I think, focusing on playwriting and sort of not being necessarily in the normal TV pipeline. But he came to this he wrote this project. I again, this is another one that my first crack at it was getting a chance to read it in its unadulterated form. And what he was going for was so pure and so odd, I couldn't get it out of my head. None of us could. And so in that sense, you want to try to capitalize on a show creator's vision. And if at all possible, I think our philosophy is we'd love to be able to give them, you know, a crack at also running their own show. Now, to be fair, on Outsiders, we did, once we partnered with Sony, we also partnered with a wonderful showrunner who's his true creative partner, Peter Toland, who is much more of a veteran of the business. And together, the two of them do it. But Peter Mattei is very, very present, and he's the one often on the ground in Pittsburgh where we shoot the show, sort of, you know, managing the scene there. And he's really grown into it. And so for us, anyway, it's a long-winded answer, but it's a long way of saying it's best if you can have the, you know, the creative mind that wrote the script also manage, you know, their own creative process, if it's at all possible.
I want to ask you sort of as a follow-up to that about this whole situation of peak TV, which a lot of people have coined. And there was a panel yesterday, the day before, at the Austin TV Festival, known as ATX, which focused on this. And one of the thoughts that was addressed was this issue of, well, we have this talent shortage, and peak TV is going, you know, we can't do more scripted television, no matter how good it can be or quality can be, because we don't have enough talent. And then you see people like Peter, or you see people like Sam Esmail of Mr. Robot, another person that got his shot to run the show. You see that there's more diversity programs by the networks, like yourselves, by production companies. There's festivals like New York and Series Fest in Denver and L.A. that are allowing people outside the TV system to create pilots for television. And some of them now are getting into the talent development process at networks like yours or studios or production companies. So with all that going, isn't that a misnomer? I mean, that isn't the talent there to make more quality TV happen?
Certainly. I think we firmly subscribe to the belief that there's always room for great TV. And, you know, we're forever going to, you know, reach for that. And whether we've achieved it yet or not, I'll let other people decide. But I do think that, absolutely, I don't think that just because someone's already been in the proverbial Hollywood pipeline, does that mean that, you know, that's the only source to seek for ideas. I mean, there's plenty of great ideas out there that just haven't been discovered yet. And so to the extent that, you know, we can have a role in finding some of those, and quite frankly, you know, capitalize on it, we will. It's you know, it's that purity of vision that we're really looking for.
John Wax is the new Executive Vice President of Original Filming at WGN America, the folks behind Outsiders, Underground, Salem, Manhattan, and more. And he's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for John, give us the ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple0498. Friday on the program, we'll go live to the Rocky Mountain area for our second annual visit with the programming festival known as Series Fest. 34 pilots are up this year, including a pilot that was originally presented last year at the New York TV Festival and showcased on this program called Dead John. Will it do well in Denver? We will find out from organizers and producers Randy Kleiner and Kaylee Westbrook. They're with us live from Series Fest in Denver, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow We Televise. As we did last year, we will invite the best pilot winner there to be on an upcoming episode of our program. John, what is in the pipeline in terms of what we can expect for WGN America the rest of this year and into next?
We have a couple of things we're prepping. One is that's coming up next is a pilot called Roadside Picnic, which is based on – it's a sci-fi piece, our first stab at sci-fi, but very grounded sci-fi. And it's based on a Soviet-era novel, which actually became the inspiration for, if you're a film buff, Tarkovsky's film Stalker in the late 70s, and then there was a series of video games also with the Stalker name. But it's a piece that we have transcribed, set in the United States as well, and it's an interesting piece about, you know, someone about a scavenger of sorts who sort of seeks to find the nuggets of gold among the, you know, what's left over from an alien visitation that happened years ago. And there's a number of character complications within it. So wonderful piece. We're really excited about it. It comes from Sony and a writer named Jack Paglen, and it's going to be directed by another Game of Thrones director alum and still active very much, Alan Taylor. Beyond that, we're starting to prep a show pilot called Scalped, which is based on a DC comic, and that is set almost entirely on an Indian reservation. So we're really excited about that one, but it's a crime story set on an Indian reservation, which is painting it with too broad of a brush. The character work is fantastic, and we're prepping that now and working on the script a little bit.
A year or so ago, your network announced an anthology series, a weekly anthology based on the Ten Commandments, taking that famous part of biblical literature and turning it into a modern-day anthology where every week different writer, different director would approach a particular commandment. Is that still on the table?
Yeah, we're still working on it. It's on a little slower burn. We approached some pretty big names to be involved with it, and sometimes getting everyone's schedules to align when they have a very robust feature career can be difficult. So it's going slower than we'd like, but that's no one's fault. I've always thought it's a wonderful idea. It's something, you know, that we've been excited about and we talked about, frankly, since we all kind of, took these jobs, you know, 3 years ago. So, yes, another long-winded way of saying it's in process, but it's moving slowly.
What do you think about the idea of weekly anthology shows as opposed to the yearly anthology, like An American Crime Story, An American Crime, et cetera, where, the characters change, the plot, the basic plot, the basic idea stays the same, but the plot changes from year to year with same cast, different cast every year, as opposed to a weekly anthology where you get the opportunity to test new writers, test new directors, test new cast from week to week. It looks like that is starting to come back. Tales of the Crypt, the project that M. Night Shyamalan is doing for TNT, there's a couple of other projects also in the works. I believe Sci-Fi is working on Hulu is doing something called Dimension 404 from Freddie Wong and his Rocket Jump people. Sci-Fi is working on a weekly anthology series. What's your thoughts about, do you think we may be in for bringing the weekly anthology back?
Well, I mean, as you said, it is the era of peak TV, so I think, every slice of television is being brought back in some way, shape, or form, which is great to see. And, you know, I think Ten Commandments is our sole stab at that. We haven't gravitated towards too many of those. They can be tough for a small network like ourselves. If you're going to spend what we will need to spend in marketing to get these things off the ground, you do hope that they have the possibility of repeating and being an ongoing series. But the Ten Commandments and the talent involved was just too big of an idea and too good to pass up. So we're excited about that one. But for us personally, I don't know if it's an agenda moving forward to try to develop too many of those.
John, last winter, you experimented with a couple of unscripted shows, both of which we covered with the producers of them on this program. Where does the network stand on unscripted television?
Truth be told, it isn't under my purview, but it's, you know, look, it's been a slow burn on that as well. We did take a couple of stabs at it. I also know that, you know, on the Tribune, the studio side of our business, we're doing some things for the syndication group that will be in the unscripted realm. In terms of immediate plans for WGN America, I don't know that too much is coming, but it's not to say that it won't be. We're very much, you know, sort of finding our way as a network. We're still growing, and I think we're open to any number of programming possibilities.
WGN America is available on cable and satellite throughout the country, and we are speaking with John Wax. He is the new original executive vice president of original programming. He's live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum live with you from the other coast, New York, here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for John, ring it in 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Disney Channel has a new series coming out next week. It has social media and it has fun in its own vein. It's called The Zark Bar, and we will speak with the creators and executive producers of that series. That's Kyle Stigna, Josh Lehman, and Eric Friedman. The first two are part of a Disney Channel program getting new writers into television. They're the first alumni taking their shot, and they'll all be with us on Monday's episode. Also on Monday, someone who very well could be in the hunt for an Emmy Award for music for his work on Mr. Robot and American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson. Matt Quayle will join us. That's all Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. John, what's your take overall on where we're going in television with original programming? What excites you the most about where we're all headed?
I mean, so much of it has been written about so much more eloquently than I can probably put it, but it's just quite simply, I think we are in the throes of the golden age of television, and I'm not personally discouraged, you know, by the peak TV concerns. Again, you know, we really believe that, great programming will rise to the top, and so you know, what's fun for us, I'll speak personally, you know, having come from the ecosystem at Fox, where I was for many years, this has been a whole new challenge. It's essentially been, you know, a startup, but with a, you know, a solid company backing it. And in that sense, it's been fun because, you know, WGN America as a network was something that, you know, mostly ran reruns and was known for Cubs games and other Chicago programming. And I think in the 3 years that, you know, we've been in existence in the LA office, I think we've been able to start to expand that a little bit, and I think people are starting to think of us as a destination for original programming. And what's fun is the sky's still the limit. I think we're not, you know, duty-bound to speak to necessarily an existing sort of chunk of WGN America audience. I think we can find with different types of programming, we can pull in different groups of people. And so in that sense, it's creatively liberating, and I'm sure I'm not the only one to speak to that. I'm sure other development executives at other networks can feel the same thing, that I think you're rewarded for being bold and for trying ideas that haven't been tried before. And so, you know, there's a fine line there. You can also try to, you know, outdo each other with, you know, sort of ridiculous premises, and hopefully everything comes from a place of character, and everything we try has a reason for being and isn't gratuitous. That's certainly our intent. But it's fun to work in an environment like that. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the environment, in the wake of the Oscar controversy over people of color not being nominated in the key categories for the second year in a row, there has been a bunch of efforts now, or a step up in efforts, to try to get more women, more people of color involved in television. Efforts like We for She, We Did It Together, Made by Women, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Are there any plans for any sort of initiative to try to encourage more work by people of color, more work by women at WGN America, or maybe try to develop new talent that ultimately will produce and create shows for you?
I mean, certainly we've been cognizant of that. I would say we've been on the front lines of that, you know, with our show Underground, of course. But beyond Underground, absolutely. We are, you know, always with every piece of programming that we do, and frankly, pieces in development, we are, you know, trying to pay attention to, you know, diverse voices, because, again, we've been very much rewarded, I'll speak to Underground again, by, you know, putting that forth. And, you know, as we all know, African-American voices haven't always been well represented in the TV landscape. And certainly we've reaped the benefits, not just, you know, creatively and not just from plaudits, but also from a business standpoint. So it works on all levels. So by you know, we're absolutely committed to, you know, continuing to try to seek, you know, different projects that fit that mold.
And obviously the pilot dealing with a Native American site could certainly open up the door in terms of having Native Americans write, direct, you know, and work on that series.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that very much excites us about it. I mean, it is, you know, if you want to talk about American Tales, if that's sort of the brand that, you know, early on here we're forming, I mean, what's more American than that story? And to be clear, that story is not a period story. We've done a lot of period pieces, but that's the DC comic upon which it's based is, and our show will also follow this, is a modern day story on an Indian reservation. And so I think that, you know, by no means, you know, am I personally an expert on it, but we're very committed to having that story told as real away while still, you know, creating a piece of entertainment, and I think we're cognizant of that as we move forward.
Hmm. You mentioned earlier about Peter Trolin being involved with Outsiders. Of course, he did the great work with Dennis Leary on Rescue Me for FX. Is there a particular writer or director or producer that you, during your new tenure at GN, your expanded tenure, if you will, at GN America, that you want to work with, that you would hope will create a show for you?
It's going to sound opportunistic, but I swear to God, you could ask anyone. Jeremy Padesua would be one of those people. I've called various times over the years to his agents, and he and I have, you know, met when we were back at Fox, and I'm trying to pry him free from the clutches of HBO. So one of these days we will do it. But obviously his career is going fantastic, and I'm remain a huge admirer of his work. So. Not to take the bird in the hand that's in front of me, but absolutely, that's one of the names that we've talked about here, you know, sort of longingly.
Well, as you heard, he might be open. We'll see after he gets the next pair of season 7 shows up. He might be available. And of course, he's incredibly versatile, as we hope he proved with the unit assessment.
Well, those Game of Thrones episodes, man, they do buy up eat up a lot of time for the directors and everyone involved in a wonderful way. We get to enjoy the product as viewers, but hopefully, once he gets back from whatever faraway land he's in, yes, we can have him in.
I got to ask before you go, John, your thoughts on working with Anthony Hemingway on Underground. It looks like he may very well be the directing find of the year, and he may end up being an Emmy nominated for both Underground and for American Crime Story because of Underground will be in Best Drama, American Crime Story Best Limited Series or Miniseries, so he very well could end up with one or two awards under his belt.
Well, I mean, I think his screen work certainly speaks for itself. Obviously, I'm talking about our own show, of which we're very proud. But, you know, yes, American Crime Story and everything else he's been working on, he's been prolific. But he is maybe what, you know, obviously most people don't get to see is just his tireless work ethic and positive attitude behind the scenes. He is absolutely a unifying force who just is involved in every creative decision. And he's just a wonderful sounding board. He's, you know, he really is just I cannot say enough good things about him. He has been a huge part of that show's success. I mean, he's really, you know, taken Misha and Joe's vision and he's just, you know, he's added to it as well. So we're so happy to have him, and we're really happy to have him on board season 2, which we're prepping now. He's on board to do a big chunk of the second season as well.
Great to hear. He's a marvelous director. We had him on the show in a separate segment, and we had Misha and Joe talk about Anthony, and there's no question that he is a talent that it seems no matter what set he is on, and certainly on Underground set, he just brings everyone together. He gives them tremendous creative freedom, and at the same time, he gets tremendous energy to, like, try different things and experiment with the way a show comes out.
Absolutely.
WGN America, it is the home of Outsiders and Underground, and I have a very good hunch that one or both may very well be in the hunt for Emmy Awards coming out later this summer. Check out WGN America on cable and satellite near you. It's in most areas of the country. And if you want more details about the programming on the network at any time, here's where you go online, www.wgnamerica.com. That's www.wgnamerica.com. John Wax, WGN America's new head of original programming, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on your new expanded role there, and we'd love to have you back anytime.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It is a pleasure. Take care. All the greatest.
You too.
John Wax, WGN America's Executive Vice President of Original Programming, joining us live from Los Angeles. Once again, for more details about the channel, www.wgnamerica.com. Before we go, a couple of thoughts, and I want to alert everybody up and down the Blog Talk Radio line that we are going a little over our usual hour, and we've already made arrangements to do that, so we won't be cut off, happy to say that. So a couple of comments about a few things that have transpired over the last day or so, and then we have a special guest announcement, too. First of all, the Tony Awards last night. It was wonderful to see that after so many years, that award show, which I consider one of the classiest award show on television, finally got its due for the majority of viewers. It got a 33% boost in viewership from last year. It was the number one show of the night anywhere, and also it had the biggest audience in the last 15 years. Obviously, some of that was due to Hamilton doing so well, 11 Tony Awards, one shy of the record held by the producers. Also, there was a lack of major competition on the other networks, specifically a game in the NBA Finals on ABC, which is usually on up against it the last couple of years. But also, I think one factor was everyone wanted to see how they would deal with the aftermath of an incredible tragedy taking place hours earlier in Orlando, Florida. And what happened was it was dealt with incredible class and sensitivity, but not overdoing it. The opening moments with James Corden facing the back of the stage, where you could see the audience at the Beacon Theater saying what he said, beautifully done by producer director Glenn Weiss and by Corden. What Barbara Streisand said, what Frank Langella said, tremendous. But the big thing was that fantastic sonnet that was delivered by the creator of Hamilton, which was done after he received the award for best score. I'm also talking about the wonderful Lin Manuel Miranda, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and what he did, how he started with the tribute to his wife and then expanded from there, and that wonderful line, love, 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 over and over again, was just heartfelt. You couldn't help but cry and be moved and be inspired. Congratulations to the Tony Award on what happened last night on CBS, and I really hope it's the beginning where the Tony Awards will get its due in the audience. Despite the fact that Broadway theater is not immediately accessible all over the country, that's what separates it from film and from TV and from music, that maybe this is the beginning of a new golden age for that marvelous award ceremony. And it certainly was a great boost for that. Secondly, we just had earlier this afternoon the latest keynote from the Apple Worldwide Developer Conference, Eddie Q talking about what was going on with Apple TV. The good news is that Apple TV was second in line with this year's keynote after the Apple Watch and before the Mac. The bad news is there wasn't a lot of detail about Apple TV and where it is going. It is amazing to me that 9 months earlier, when Tim Cook, the head of Apple, says the future of TV is apps, and he shows the kind of apps we're talking about, not just video channels showcased on an Apple TV, but also Airbnb and Zillow and Guild Group and TripAdvisor, and virtual reality possibilities like Little Star, which you've shown this program. None of that from Eddie Q. Why the heck not? Why couldn't they show of the more than 6,000 apps that have now come to be on Apple TV 2.0, why couldn't they demonstrate them? Take a few seconds and demonstrate them. Why not? And why not say more about some of the other features that might be coming Apple TV, especially the idea of using HomeKit, the idea where you could use Apple TV as a way to connect and interact with other smart home devices, whether it's a thermostat, whether it's a refrigerator, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Very big, big disappointment. However, just remember, that's just the keynote. I'm hopeful that as the week goes on, that those 5,000 people attending that Worldwide Developer Conference will get a lot of inspiration to adapt their current smartphone and tablet apps for Apple TV, as well as create their new ones with their wonderful imagination. Now, here's what Apple TV needs to do, and really do. Stop not talking to press, especially here in New York, and put together a press event on Apple TV, bring together the press, tech press, general press, from local radio and TV stations, from the newspapers, from USA Today, et cetera, yours truly, and other such programs that cover consumer electronics and television, whether from Block Talk Radio or other sources, and bring those Apple developers together, the ones in New York that are trying to create Apple TV things, including Little Star. Let us see what's going on, and let us see what's in the pipeline. It is high time for Apple TV to do an event like this, and not just be public when they want to do an event in Silicon Valley. It's time to get it going. Frankly, Apple TV, along with Amazon, along with Google, is not saying enough about what they're doing with smart TVs and smart TV-making devices. It's time to open up the mouth and do so not just in a blog post, not just in a Silicon Valley event, but do it in New York, in Los Angeles, other places around the country. Let's get talking about this. No wonder why very few tech press people are talking about smart TV sets and smart TV devices on a regular basis, when in fact this is one of the big stories in consumer electronics, in television, in media this year, maybe this decade, and maybe even this century. This is the way that people are watching Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, et cetera, on the television set, not on the smartphone, not on the tablet. And if Apple TV wants to be around for a long time to come, and they certainly can be, they have to make that case more in public. So does Amazon, so does Google, so does LG, so does Vizio, everybody in this business. It's time to open the mouth and do events here in New York and in Los Angeles and Texas and Chicago and not just Silicon Valley. And not just do it in a blog post where if we're lucky to see it, we're lucky to write about it. It's time to do it. And finally, we want to update you on a guest announcement that we made a week ago. We told you a week ago that on this program today, we would have one of the people that is involved in a very special organization that I'm involved with, Landmark Worldwide, one of the people that leads the Landmark Forum, Jocelyn Herman Saccio. As you mentioned last week, Joplin, as well as other landmark forum leaders, have expanded in recent years their outreach to become guests on local news programming and talk programming on local radio and TV stations around the country. And it was in that vein that we were invited to have Joplin on. Unfortunately, as you can hear, Joplin is not on today's program. The folks involved in the publicity, unfortunately, had to cancel that situation late last week. We're sorry about that. Nobody's wrong here. There's nothing at fault here. We're not making anybody wrong. It happens. Sometimes life happens. But I do want you to know that we will talk to Joplin at some point. We will invite her on, or any landmark forum leader who'd like to come on our program and talk about their guest work. We'd love to have them on. And I hope at some point we will have Joplin or one of the other 60-plus landmark forum leaders on this program. It would be a dynamite pleasure to have them and to have them share what it's been like to do that outreach and also what it's been like to lead such an incredible phenomenon as the Landmark Forum, which over the last 25 years has engaged more than 2.5 million people all over the world, and the number keeps growing and growing and growing. In the meantime, if you would like to hear more about Landmark, and if you'd like to perhaps get involved and do the Landmark Forum or the Landmark courses, go to this website, www.landmarkworldwide.com. That's www.landmarkworldwide.com. And check out Landmark. Many of Landmark centers have introduction events, usually on weeknights, also on Saturdays, mornings and afternoons, and they'd be delighted to see you in person or hear from you by phone or by email. So check out landmarkworldwide.com, check out the Landmark Center near you, and make it a go to be involved with the Landmark Forum. Here in New York, Landmark Worldwide's New York Center is located on West 33rd Street, close to 8th Avenue. It's right across the street from the Moynihan Station Post Office and Madison Square Garden, and I do hope you do it. As someone who has been involved with Landmark for nearly 23 years, did the Landmark Forum in 1994 and has had a fantastic life ever since, I invite you to give it a go and see how Landmark can make a big difference, a huge difference, in the quality of your life. And finally, again, if you missed this at the beginning, we want to join everybody at Blog Talk Radio in offering our condolences, our prayers, and our hopes to the victims, their families, their loved ones, from what happened this past Sunday morning, yesterday, in Orlando, Florida. 49 people killed, 53 people at local area hospitals were wounded, many in critical condition. And please stay tuned to Blog Talk Radio for more information and more programming that deals with the aftermath of this incredible tragedy, the biggest mass shooting in American history. And again, we join everyone at Blog Talk Radio in sending our condolences, our love, and our sympathies to the victims, their families, and their loved ones. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will go live to Denver, Colorado, and hear for the second year in a row from the people behind the annual Series Fest, Randy Kleiner and Kaylee Westbrook. And then next Monday on this program, we will have the people behind the new Disney Channel series, Bizarre Part, and a possible Emmy nominee for Best Music for his work on Mr. Robot and American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, composer Matt Quayle. In the meantime, if you came in on today's episode late, you'd like to hear our episodes you missed, please go to our homepage. It's available for you 24/7. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check out our podcasts. They're available on iTunes.com. Download us to your smartphone, tablet, take us on the go. And yes, our program, as well as other Blog Talk Radio programs, available in podcast form on Apple TV 2.0's iTunes podcast app. You can get Apple TV through your local Apple store or order online. We would love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? And yes, we'd like to hear your thoughts about how TV covered the tragedy in Orlando, Florida, on Sunday and since. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. We really appreciate it. We do return all emails within 24 hours. That's how you also get involved in our weekly Classic Trivia Contest. Don't forget, if you take part in our contest, make sure you enclose your mailing address. If you missed the question earlier today, we'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and also my own Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. However you get involved with us, we appreciate you do so because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. our production associates, Amy Domestico and Candace Williams. Andy Tell is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator and chief executive is Alan Levy. Tomorrow Night Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow Night Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your week. We're back Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And again, stay tuned to Blog Talk for more programming dealing with the aftermath of the shooting yesterday in Orlando, Florida. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.